Imagine a workforce in Canada, 8 million people strong. They work to save the healthcare system $32 billion every year. But you don't apply for this job. You're not even assigned this job. As Shakespeare would say, it is thrust upon you. I'm talking about caregivers. And we're in a bit of a crisis in this country when it comes to caregivers. More than 50% report they are at or near burnout. Many feel that they have been isolated, ignored. We're going to address that today and hopefully bring some hope to caregivers out there that they are not alone and that there is indeed help available. Care for the Caregivers, right now on the Mental Health Podcast. My guests, Lauren Bates, Chair, Ontario Caregiver Coalition, Ron Bellino, who is a caregiver himself, but also with many caregiver groups, is an incredible advocate for caregivers. So is Lauren. Hello to both of you.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi there, Kevin.
Good to be here.
This is a tall order because a lot of people who I have interviewed, and we have a documentary, by the way, and I'm going to tell you more about that coming up in just a little bit, but the people I talked to didn't know they were caregivers. So it is one of those roles we play where we just happen into it. We have an aging parent, so we step in. We have a disabled child, so we, of course, have to step in. Can we define what a caregiver is?
Well, to my mind, I think it's useful to think actually quite broadly about what caregiving is. It's one of the reasons it's hard to define. A caregiver to me is anybody, can be a family, friend, a neighbor who's providing, you know, physical, practical, mental, emotional support to somebody who's living with a disability or an acute illness or living with frailty. So that can be things like, you know, running people around to appointments and helping with meal preparation and, you know, helping people navigate the healthcare system. It can be, you know, much more complex in terms of actually providing medical support. So if you think about family members who are helping somebody who's in the last stages of life may end up actually providing significant medical support. It can be advocating for that person. So it can be very intensive or it can be less intensive. It's really about providing support to people who for that time period, you know, are vulnerable or need additional support to live lives that are dignified and comfortable.
And Ron, you don't even have to live together to be a caregiver.
Correct. Yes. I actually believe exactly like what Lauren said there, a lot of the actions that are happening. I think many times we get caught up on the label caregiver, which it's great to acknowledge that and be aware of that. But I get more excited to talk to people about what are your caring actions that you're offering. For example, myself, I was a son to my father who had dementia. My mom was his wife, partner. And then eventually we started caring more. Doesn't mean that you just care for someone and say, well, I care for my dad. But I would ask, well, what kind of caring do you offer? And as Lauren listed a whole bunch there, like from physical to emotional, all those type of caring actions is what I pay attention to more. And that's where I would tell someone, I'm saying, oh, you're caring more now. And that could be considered as a caregiver or a care partner. So for myself, yeah, I didn't live with my father, but I was caring from a distance here in Toronto, 20 minutes away. And there are many ways to care remotely. So yeah, to me, I pay attention more to the actions that are happening when it comes to someone being a caregiver.
When right off the top, I had mentioned that caregivers save this country $32 billion, that's with a B, $32 billion a year in healthcare costs. How?
Well, I guess that goes to all of those things that people are doing. So if you think about, you know, people who are being cared for in their own homes or in their own communities with the support of family, friends, and neighbors who might otherwise be living in institutionalized settings. So that can be, you know, a parent or a spouse who might otherwise be living in long-term care. It can be, you know, providing what is essentially pretty complex home care supports, right? So you're assisting somebody who's frail with the activities of daily living. You know, you're helping to dress and feed and toilet somebody who needs a lot of support. And otherwise, that might be done by personal support workers. You're providing medication management. You're, you know, the breadth of things that caregivers do continually expands. And because many of our systems are under strain, caregivers are doing more and more of this type of work. So I think there was a recent survey that suggested that 75% of caregivers have undertaken tasks that otherwise would be done by a nurse or PSW because they felt that they needed to get that done.
And you think, Ron, that, you know, let's talk about auto workers. There's a lot of them. They get respect. You would think that a workforce of 8 million people who save billions of dollars would actually be recognized and get more respect. But caregivers fly under the radar. And this is where problems begin for caregivers.
Yes, exactly. Caregivers are kind of that hidden population that people don't respect enough or realize the amount of, I'm going to say, dollars and time. Those are the two that I always look at. The dollars and time that they contribute back into the community, specifically into their personal lives, with their loved ones, with their neighbors, with their friends, that people don't really calculate and realize that, wow, that caregiver, for example, took, you know, 2 days off of work, you know, just to care for their loved one. That caregiver had to maybe spend so much money, you know, just, you know, for that person that they're caring for, that could be from traveling, from parking, you know, to a point, you know, taking them to appointments, parking, whatever, taxi, all that stuff. Even the caregivers don't realize that, you know, even to themselves, they don't acknowledge, you know, that, wow, I didn't realize that, hey, this is adding up, you know, and, you know, when you add that all up, that is a huge burden to the system, to the healthcare system, and to the community itself. We need to kind of pay a little more attention, or a lot more attention, as to the numbers. Okay, that $32 billion, yes, that's huge when you add it all up. Caregivers by themselves, they don't really pay attention until it starts becoming stressful over time, and it creeps up. That's a challenging part here, right? It's a creeping up piece that people don't realize. Oh, it's costing me more. I got to do the laundry more, let's say, just something like that. That's something that I realize, oh my gosh, we're spending so much money on just laundry. So it does add up. That does add up.
And I think that the mental health problems add up. As you do credits and debits, you know, the debit of your mental health creeps up on you. You realize, wait a minute, I haven't had an evening off in 4 years. Boy, I cannot plan vacations. I have not been able to just sit down and do something for myself. And this is a huge problem because you don't go into it prepared because, as I said off the top, you're thrust into it. And before long, you start realizing all those debits are adding up and you are hugely in debt with your mental health, Lauren.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when people think about caregiving, I think they often don't, in the abstract, think about the complexity of the jobs that caregivers are doing. If I think about, you know, the kind of advocacy and the system navigation and some of the complex tasks, for example, that I did for my mom in her last years with dementia, those are very, very skilled. They're also stressful jobs, right? So you're doing a stressful job. You're not getting recognized for it. It's eating up. And, you know, people do this. It is a meaningful. I don't want to be too negative about caregiving. It's very meaningful. I have no regrets about what I've done. But it's not recognized, it's not valued, and it does tend to socially isolate you. You can find yourself very alone because you have no time to do anything but what's the next task on your plate. And I think, you know, there's that sense of not being visible, not being valued. I remember speaking a while ago to a caregiver. Her dad had lived for a long time with addictions and significant mental illness. And then her mom developed early onset dementia, which meant that now this woman needed to care both for her mom and her dad. And she had two young kids, and she ended up having to withdraw from the workforce because she was spending all of her time looking after people's needs. And, you know, at one point I said, well, look at, you know, what you're doing. This is so amazing, everything you're doing for all these people. And she said, people say to me, what do you do all day? And I said, look at the impact you're having on people's lives. And she started to cry. And I thought, nobody is thanking this woman.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, that sense that what you're doing is essential. You're responsible for other people's lives and their well-being. And yet at the same time, it's so little visible, so little value that people think what you're doing is nothing. It's really painful.
Yeah. And you're not checking in at 9 a.m. and checking out at 5 p.m. and having weekends off.
Yeah.
Ron, is that one of the toughest things about being a caregiver? Is that, you know, you have to deal with, there are so many things, and we're going to talk about all of these. You have to deal with making appointments and navigating your way through an incredibly complex system to help your loved one. But is that the hardest thing about being a caregiver, is just being under the radar?
Well, definitely that is one. The path of a caregiver, when you ask me the question, and I'm sure it's the same for Lauren, is what's the hardest part? I would say it depends where you're at in that whole caregiving journey. It is going to constantly change, which is one of the hardest things, to keep up with the various changes that someone has to go through simply in living their own life. Okay, just that caregiver has a path for their own that they had looked at to say, well, this is what life's supposed to be for me. And then crap, you know, like, this has just changed. Even they may not even be aware, saying, yes, I can't go on that vacation, or I can't hang out with, you know, my social community. I have to leave. I've had to leave many dinners just when dinner's about to start, when we're out at a restaurant, say, I got to get going. So the hardest thing for me, I believe, is the ability to keep up with all the changes that you're not even prepared for. But caregiving is not new. Okay, there have been many caregivers that have gone through this ahead of you. And it's the ability to kind of, you know, be proactive. You know, caregiving for me, for most people, is a reactive kind of lifestyle. You're not ready for it. You're not prepared for a situation. And then you realize that it's not the path you wanted, and you just kind of keep reacting. And many people struggle with that. So there is not one answer, you know, what's the hardest piece. I think all of it will be hard if you're not prepared. But also if you know, many don't have the supports and the resources and the recognition of what it takes to be a caregiver.
And there's also that you don't have any other choice, really, when it comes right down to it. You know, if you're not there for your loved one, there's probably not many other people who will be. And so it's that lack of choice as well that could lead to some frustration.
I'll add to, yeah. So the choice comment there, I'll agree with it a bit there. I always believe that there's choice. Okay. The thing is, I don't feel that people know what the choices are, or become aware of the choices, or realize that you can create better solutions out there. You know, for example, one thing I talk about a lot are incorporating tools and technologies and systems in place. You know, create that to have better choice, to seek out, you know, those friends that you might not even realize are going to be friends of yours. For my dad, who was at risk of getting lost and going missing, he would go out into the community, and sometimes he won't make it home safely in time. I would then realize that, hey, you know what? I got to get in some technologies like a GPS tracking device with his permission. I would let the community know of the coffee shop that he would go to say, hey, keep my dad safer, you know, help us out there. So it's about realizing that, hey, we have answers out there. You know, we just need to have the will. We need to have the support from the government, from the healthcare system, and our neighbors. So is that the full answer? No, but there are better choices that we've got to keep working at, in my opinion. But many people struggle to say, hey, I'm limited. This is the only choice I have. And I get that. I do get that.
There is a documentary that we produced through the facilities of Ontario Shores, the Ontario Shores Foundation, called The Caregivers. It's on YouTube right now. I encourage you to check it out. Just go to Ontario Shores' YouTube page. If you search that up, it's right on the home page. I had a chance to interview caregivers everywhere, and I met so many wonderful people, and they also embrace the technology and embrace anything that can help make their jobs easier, more effective, and more effective for their loved ones. So I want to sort of shift gears for the rest of this podcast into something more positive, because it's tough. And I understand the frustration, and it is definitely out there. And there's always that tendency to say, well, the government needs to do more. Government needs to do more. Yes, they do. There is no doubt about that. In the meantime, what are you going to do for yourself? So for both of you, I'd like to sort of switch to that more positive. And I'm going to suggest that I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, because I have not been a caregiver other than having children. I have not really been a caregiver in life. Is the most important thing to try and ease the frustration, to help your mental health, is the most important thing peer support and knowing that you're not alone?
I think what's going to be most important is going to differ from person to person, right? Caregivers all have different circumstances and different journeys, but certainly I think connecting with other caregivers, if you can, I think can be extremely useful, you know, partly because there's nothing like being around people who understand what you're going through, who really get it. And you know, you don't have to explain why certain things are stressful, or, you don't have to explain, you know, a lot of what you're going through. You can laugh about things that other people might think is a little bit gallows humor. You know, so you have that sense of being understood and in community, as well as caregivers are really great about sharing information, sharing tips. You know, this is what I've tried. You know, have you thought about applying for this? Because the systems are very, very confusing to navigate. And often, I know many caregivers have found their way, not by calling, information lines in government offices, but by talking to each other. So I think that's also very helpful. Something else in terms of peer support, I think that I want to highlight is how meaningful it can be for caregivers to come together to advocate for change. That's a lot of what the Caregiver Coalition does, is look at, you know, things are difficult. What can we do together to make change for other caregivers? And it's a way to give meaning out of your own struggles, right? I think the more that you can find meaning in what you do, the easier it is sometimes to bear the difficulties.
I'd like to add to what Lauren said. This is a big, big deal for caregivers to really realize, is that ability to advocate for themselves, to also advocate with each other, with their peer supports. It is one where it could be a very lonely journey, you know, for that caregiver who does not realize that there are others that, again, I said it earlier, have gone through this before, or are going through it with them, or are even just starting, you know, that they could support. The ability to just find that one other caregiver. I've always said, when you come up to a caregiver and you meet them in person, and you don't even know each other, and you say, oh yeah, I'm caring for my dad with dementia, or I'm just caring for someone, and you say that to another caregiver, you connect right away. Many times, you know, everything is dropped with your other values in life, and you just look at each other and you say, okay, I get it. I get what you're saying. And then you will just naturally support each other. And a lot of that you know, will happen either in person, but it also happens a lot virtually now. Something to keep in mind, there's a lot of online groups where people will never know each other in person, but they actually connect and they empathize with each other. They sympathize with each other. They just listen to each other. And that goes a long way. And that's sometimes the biggest resource to one caregiver is to find another one or two. So that's something that many have to realize to try and seek out if you can, as soon as you are ready and aware that there are other people out there.
The Ontario Caregiver Coalition is a great place to start for that. OntarioCaregiverCoalition.ca. You know what I've been hearing wonderful things about, though, is the Alzheimer's Society. People sing the praises of how they really give guidance and incredible education and that peer support and that camaraderie. How else can you reach out? Because it may seem like a simple question, but I think when it comes, you mentioned loneliness, Ron, and we know, and we've done shows on it in the past, loneliness, according to the U.S. Surgeon General, does the same damage to your physical and mental health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And that's loneliness. So we want to do whatever we can to start combating the loneliness. So how else do you reach out?
So let's just talk about loneliness. Like even in the UK, they even have a minister, you know, for loneliness. So that's how serious it is. So reaching out, for me, it always starts with that ability to be willing to just be a little vulnerable, okay, to tell the story, because you don't know who's going to receive that and say, okay, I'm here for you, or I'm here to listen to you. There's many, and I'm going to pick on the gentlemen out there, you know, the men in the group. I do so many presentations, as Lauren has, to caregivers, I'm sure, and in all the presentations I do, all the talks, you know, specifically to caregivers, it would usually be 90% women that are there listening. Mm-hmm. Okay. And men, you know, they'd like
we're
to be
tough,
there, but,
you know, they're yeah. tough, stiff upper lip, and we don't need any help.
Exactly. And that's the narrative that I always tell people, be careful of the story you have, you know, in your life, you know, the narratives you have of this is how it should be. Be willing to say, hey, you know, it's not easy. You know, I'm a guy that's struggling a bit. I'm a son, a father, and this is for everybody. Just to say, hey, you know what? This is not going well, or I'm having difficulty. And by doing that, and again, that is something that shouldn't just be going to, you know, the Alzheimer's Society or one group. You know, that's great where you can, if you can do that. But sometimes it's just simply saying that to your neighbor, you know, to, you know, the person who you trust, you know, when you go, you know, to the restaurant and or the coffee shop that you keep going to, and then they know you. It's starting that conversation, and then someone will pick that up and then start building it up from there. Because caregivers are all around you, okay? They're everywhere, and it first starts, you know, with someone just acknowledging or telling their challenges. And I would tell people, even how you say it, you know, I would even say, I have this challenge, okay? Sometimes I've noticed those that say the word challenge versus I have a problem, you know, I usually see those that many people that say I have a problem are the ones that struggle more because they keep telling the story of the problem. Mm-hmm. Versus those who I usually say, well, what's your challenge? So your challenge is this. Then the challenge means that they're now in problem solving mode or trying to move forward with it. So language does matter, you know, and that's something that, yeah, I just remind people is how you tell your story to yourself and to the community and to others is a big deal. And I pay attention to their words when they talk.
And this is something that, you know, this conversation we're having right now is not just for caregivers who are caregivers right now. The aging population, the increase in prevalence of dementia, the cutbacks that government cutbacks we're going through, more and more people every day are becoming caregivers, so much so that we are not too far away from 50% of Canadians will one day be a caregiver. At one time, we're going to have one out of every two Canadians is going to be a caregiver. So if you're not one right now, it's a good chance you are going to be. And it would be better to go into this with eyes wide open, Lauren.
Well, and I think, you know, also to be fair. Often when caregivers are in the worst moments, when they need the most supports, is exactly when they're too overwhelmed to seek them out. You know, I was speaking with somebody recently who runs a clinic dealing with people in the last stages of life, and saying, you know, they do offer supports for caregivers, but it's the ones that are often assessed as being the most in need of support who at that moment, all they can do is deal with the emergency that's in their hands, right? So we also need to think about aftercare, right? So that you've gone through something and your caregiving journey is over. And now how do we support people into that next phase, right? To come to grips with what you've been through, what that was like, and how do you pick up your life and put it back together? So one caregiver that I was speaking to recently, she'd stepped out of the workforce to care for her dad, who was living with dementia. And, you know, when he died, it was that feeling of, you know, stepping out, you're in intensive grief, but you're also kind of stepping out into a vacuum, right? The supports and the world that you'd built around your caregiving, you know, now you're grieving, you don't have your job, you're like, where is my future? That's a very difficult moment. So I think if we think about a kind of like a life course of caregiving, helping people, as you say, Kevin, you know, begin to navigate as they move into it or to prepare for it. How do we support people while they're doing that intensive caregiving? And then to help people, caregivers as well, kind of integrate that experience and move forward again at the point when their caregiver journey has come to a close. So thinking about it in that kind of holistic way, there will be periods where you really can't reach out for supports because all you're doing is dealing with the emergency. There will be periods when you can, and you can be investing in building up those supports around you, right? And so thinking about it in that way is perhaps helpful, so that, you know, people often will say to caregivers, well, you need to put your own, you know, mask on first, you know, as they say in the airplane, mm-hmm. you know, the mask, the oxygen mask comes down, you put that on first, then you put that on your child, right? And people say that to caregivers. But I know I have experienced this myself. There are moments where it's like, well, there is no time for that. But that's not going to be all of the time. So when there are those moments that you can take that time, that you can be looking for respite, that you can be looking for supports, to take advantage of that, but also not to feel, I always want to be careful about telling caregivers that they're doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. Because in general, my feeling is if you're doing it, you're doing it right. You know,
every situation is unique.
Yeah.
And do you think, Ron, that there's a danger for some caregivers, though? And I say this all, and again, I want to keep positive, but just maybe to bring it up. And in the video, I interviewed Dr. Lorraine Patterson, who is a psychologist here at Ontario Shores Center for Mental Health Sciences. And she had said, don't forget to get to know your loved one. So she used the example of her father. She said, while she was taking care of him, at the same time, she took time to keep her relationship with him alive, to find out more about him. And there is a chance that you might lose that a bit of that relationship because you're frustrated, you're angry, and perhaps you're focusing your anger on them sometimes, but you're forgetting about your relationship. And as you mentioned, once they're gone, then you're left in this period of mourning, and you're realizing, wait a minute, I haven't really known my dad or my mom these last few years.
Yeah, for me, I have a different story than many, because it was something very conscious of me along the way to say, hey, you know what, the story out there for my family, you know, living with dementia could be one of suffering. That's a word that's used a lot in the dementia space, and it's something that I really jump on people right away to saying, don't stick that adjective in my family's world right away, or to many. You know, it's up for that family to decide on that story. And for me, you know, many will not get this, but, you know, when I can look at the story now, my dad has since passed back in 2018, after 10 years of this journey for us. For me, I say, okay, there was this opportunity for us, and it was kind of a gift, you know, for myself personally, to really get closer to my dad and my mom together, you know, both together, and really appreciate, you know, my family in a different way that I didn't have before, you know, dealing with this journey as a caregiver. Many will not see it that way. And I understand that. And, you know, it's one of those where it's usually about, well, this is what it takes. It's taking time away from me. It's sacrifices. But I really believe it comes back again to how one chooses to pursue that narrative, okay? How they receive, you know, the challenges and the blessings that come with caregiving. If someone really pays attention to what it can do in their lives. So for me, it's been, you know, a gift in a way where it allows me now in my life to go out and pursue some of my passions, which is, you know, the same thing I can sense with Lauren, is to be out there advocating, to support others, to use our voices, to make an impact, you know, on this trend that's not in our favor, you know, this trend of caregiving, you know, caregivers, the numbers are growing, as you're saying there, Kevin. So that is something that I always remind people, is that there are these various narratives, just like Lauren said, even though the words right and wrong, okay, I said earlier, I'm picky about words. I try to avoid that. I tell people, those that use the words right or wrong a lot usually bring in guilt into their journey, where it shouldn't have to be there, you know, because if I didn't do it right, therefore it's wrong. And many caregivers will say, okay, then if I'm doing it wrong, that's a bad thing. And I feel guilty about that. No, you're caring. You're caring. As long as you're caring, as you said there, Kevin, that is great. Or I think that's what Lauren said, you know, as long as you're caring. Yeah. That's the thing that's important. And part of caregiving is it is going to screw up. You're going to screw up. It's going to go the wrong way here and there, but you're still caring. That's what matters more, but to be prepared, it's not a perfect journey. And to just appreciate, you know, the love, the moments, the community that rallies around you. So that's what's worked for me. You know, especially around the story that you tell about your journey.
Yeah, I want to strongly agree. I think many, many, many caregivers find deep meaning in what they do. It's a gift to be trusted by somebody when they're at their most vulnerable, right? So you know, and you can find, I think, and again, I don't want to generalize because everybody's experience is different, but certainly, you know, for me, myself, you know, going through the caregiving journey with some of my family members, you know, finding that even when people are at their lowest moments, you know, to be able to be there with somebody when they really need you is a deeply, it's a powerful experience. It's a life, caregiving can be a really a life-changing experience. So you find the meaning in it that comes to you, but certainly that ability to find meaning in it, to find that sense of connection with the person that you love is a strength to you in your journey. And I think many, many caregivers would say something similar. It's the love in many cases that drives people along this journey. And it's the love that also brings in the pain, right? It's hard to see somebody that you love, you know, in difficulty. It's hard to feel like you're losing somebody that you love if somebody's living with a condition that's going to bring them to the end of their life. Those are all very difficult parts of the human journey, but it's a profound experience to be able to be there for people.
And that was another recurring theme I found from the caregivers I spoke with and I interviewed, was that guilt. And it's just there. It's who we are. We feel we're not doing a good job, or we could have done better, or the guilt really factors in.
And I think it's true, picking up on what Ron said, there is no perfect journey, right? We are all just we're all just human beings doing the best we can, and you know, all of us will make mistakes along the way or fall short of the ideal. And I think sometimes in the culture, there's this ideal of a perfect, selfless, completely self-sacrificing caregiver who's, you know, never misses a moment, and, you know, all of those ideas. And of course, that's something that nobody can attain, right? We're caregivers with the selves that we have, with the skills that we bring to it, with the sometimes very complicated family histories that we have with people, right? We're not all entering into caregiving with perfect, completely happy, intact families. Sometimes caregiving is happening inside very complex relationships as well, right? So it's not a simple experience. So guilt and shame and resentment and anger and disappointment and loss are going to be part of that experience as well as those senses of joy and meaning and connection, right? They're all tangled together. It's all part of the one robe that we're weaving together.
I'd like to add here, you know, from what Lauren's saying, the word perfect, yeah. This word perfect, it goes hand in hand with guilt and all those other emotions that I think caregivers really should not bring into their lives. The story that I have here is very early in my journey. I was using a lot of technology to support my dad to live at home. You know, I was using camera sensors. This was before the pandemic, remote caregiving tools. And then I had one gentleman caregiver come up to me, you know, his mom has already passed by that point, says, "Ron, I did it all wrong. You know, I didn't do it the way you did it. And it was wrong." And I said, "What was wrong with what you were doing? You were caring." He says, "Well, I didn't use all that stuff." And I said, "That doesn't mean it's wrong. You know, I had my path, and this is what I was able to discover as to how these would help me. But that doesn't mean that you didn't care." And he was living with all this guilt, and just allowing him to have that permission to be imperfect, you know, from what that conversation, he said, "No one has told me I can screw up." You know, that part of caregiving is not about being perfect. You know, that's what we got from that conversation. And he had that guilt being held on for, like, by that point, I think 5 to 10 years. And I said, "No, it's not about being perfect. You know, that's what caregiving is about. It's imperfection and how you handle, you know, when things screw up." And that was just one of those moments, even for me, that I realized, why am I still having those moments of guilt? And I kind of removed it. That's my personal opinion, that guilt is one of those emotions that shouldn't be part of it, the whole journey.
Yeah, I think as well that, you know, the guilt sometimes just comes as part of that sense of great, great responsibility for trying to hold up and protect people who maybe don't have anybody else to speak for them, to support them. I know I was speaking recently to a caregiver whose spouse has a major depressive disorder. Her daughter also has significant challenges. She's the sole income earner. She's working from home so she can keep an eye on both of them all day. She'd taken her spouse to the ER many times and been sent home after a couple hours. And she was saying to me the incredible sense of relief she felt when her spouse was checked into, as she put it, a tiny room in CAMH without his shoelaces mm-hmm. for a few days. Because for a little while, she wasn't responsible for keeping him alive. Like those, you know, so it's easy to feel guilty if you feel like every one of your decisions is a life or death decision or is so impactful. So it's important to understand that you yourself are not the only, we're here together as a system, as a society. We should all be working together to hold each other up. So that sense of guilt sometimes just comes because you feel like you yourself alone are the person totally responsible for all of it. But it's a shared responsibility. And the more we think about ourselves in connection with each other, in connection with community and systems and friends and networks, sometimes the easier it is to try to hold up the responsibility that's lying in our hands.
And if I could, I mean, the guilt, the source of that guilt comes from one place, and that place is caring, because you care. You give a damn. Because if you didn't, you wouldn't feel guilty.
Yes. And that's why I say that if you care, you know, guilt is the one that actually makes you struggle even more. And how do we remove that? I come back to focus on that you're caring. You're caring at that moment of time with the best that you can, with the resources that you have at that moment of time, with the knowledge and the people that you have. And it still will not be perfect all the time. It may not go your way. But as Lauren was saying there, it's one where, you know, it's not just on that you, that caregiver. You know, it shouldn't be just on you. That's why, you know, Lauren and the Ontario Caregiver Coalition there is trying to, you know, do a lot of advocacy work to make it better so that it's not a huge burden on one person, okay, that it should be supported by the community, by others. So, it is something, for me, it comes back to, Kevin, you know, the narrative of how we move this forward, that, again, caregiving could be a gift in a way where, you know, you're going to get all this beauty out of it that you may not have realized. But you also have to learn how to take on the challenges and the failures that come with it. And to maybe, in my opinion, you know, it's not about guilt if you screw up. You know, that's just my personal opinion there.
And I know that both Lauren and Ron, they have incredible souls, and they care about caregivers, and they've helped so many people. If you want to get in touch with them, send me an email at thementalhealthpodcast@ontarioshores.ca. That's thementalhealthpodcast@ontarioshores.ca. I will be sure to forward it to them. Perhaps even you want to tell me your story. I would sometimes just putting these things down on paper, writing it down is kind of therapeutic in a way. So almost like a diary or a journal. But if you want to tell me your story, the Mental Health Podcast at OntarioShores.ca, I would love to hear it. I want to thank both of you for not only these past few minutes, but also for what you do for caregivers. You have been leading the fight long before this became, I don't want to use the word trendy, but trendy. You know, as more and more people become caregivers and realize that, you have been advocating and helping to lead the fight, and you continue to. You know, Ron does a lot, especially with technical tools and tech, and would love to share that with you, I know. And I know the Ontario Caregivers Coalition has so many resources for you, so I encourage you to get in touch with them. So thank you to both of you for being here and for what you do.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
I think I was thinking about some of the words that both Ron and Lauren used, conscious, mindfulness, life-changing, finding the meaning. But I think they both use this term as well, and that is, in being a caregiver, we are being given an incredible gift. I never looked at it that way before, and I think it's really interesting to think about that. We're being given an incredible gift. We are helping to change lives of our loved ones. And we know that if it wasn't for the caregiver, they would not get nearly that care. But it's also a gift, a chance to give back. Maybe it's a mom and dad who took care of you when you were younger. It's a chance to give back. And it's a chance to get to know your loved one in an entirely different way. But the most important thing to remember, and as Lauren had said, you know, when the oxygen masks come down, put yours on first. I want you to use the conscious moment, the mindfulness, and stop and think, how am I? How am I faring through this? Can I do better caring for myself? Think about the care you're giving to your loved one. I think you deserve the same amount of care. And given with the same compassion as well. Because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of your loved one. So reach out. Whatever you do, reach out somewhere, somehow. There are many ways to do it. Replay this podcast. There are different ways you can do that. But it is something that is going to help sustain you. And it's giving compassion to yourself, giving yourself that self-care. And most of all, thank you for being there. Thank you for doing what you do. You are making a big, big difference. Thank you for listening. And I want you to take care of yourself and take care of each other. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the Mental Health Podcast. If you have any thoughts about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please send me an email at thementalhealthpodcast@ontarioshores.ca. Please don't be alone. Reach out for professional help. For more resources and advice, check out our website, ontarioshores.ca. The Mental Health Podcast is a production of Ontario Shores Center for Mental Health Sciences. I'm Kevin Frankish. Take care of yourself and take care of each other.